My name is Rick, and I go by, Frederick, your cards out here. Eric and I are here today from the Crandall Design Group. We're based in Mesa, Arizona. We're in architecture, engineering, and
other
types of sciences. When you call me at the office, I usually go by Rick and Frederick. And if you say, is Rick there? Then you usually accept to Eric. So when you call, say, is Rick there? Or is Eric there? And that helps avoid the phone tag. It goes to a couple different places. Today, I want to, you know, I've lectured about domes for many years. We've completed 26 projects in 12 years. Well over 200 domes that have been built, about twice that many in proposals and other things. One of the things that's piling up in our back room, in our print room, is this particular subject, which is what I chose for this year as far as the dome conference. Because very few people understand what this is. There's 26 reasons why people build domes. This is according to marketing studies that were done years ago. And the 26 reasons, this is probably the most unknown or unrealized reason for it, and that is the sky shell. This is a sky shell. Okay. A sky shell means that if you look at the structure of the dome, it's one of the very, very few structures you can find where you can build an enclosure and screen the interior surface to be smooth. So it's a smooth interior surface that can be painted blue and make it look like the sky, hence the word sky shell. Now this is not particularly unusual or new. It's been done at Walt Disney and in Las Vegas and various other projects which I'm going to show you. But most people, when you see the term sky shell, don't understand its potential. The sky shells that I have seen myself built so far, three of them have been houses. Based on a sky shell design we did, I guess, almost 10 years ago. And although my wife and I have not built that sky shell, three other people have. That would mean that if you can imagine a house that looks like this, and you introduce some other type of architecture to the interior, usually around the perimeter, and it could be Italian or Southwest or New England or whatever you want to do. But if you walk into the dome, into a courtyard in the center, you think you're outside. That's what a sky shell is. With some of the larger sky shells, especially if you get quite large in size, like they're proposing to do here in Mumbai for the Bollywood, they're actually planning to shoot movies in there for reasons I'll explain in a little bit. But because the shell is so large, this one is close to 285 foot diameter, and it's a half round, so it's it was 120 foot high. Unless a fly lands on the ceiling, you can easily lose your depth perception. You can't see it. It's hard to describe that until I take you into a sky shell and show you. If you, especially with lighting and controlling the sound and several other things, the things you can do to walk into an environment created as a sky shell and have it disappear. Now, we've done a number of projects where we've done something that's called a night sky. And do you have any more pictures of the Newark Bible Church here? I think we might have one showing a night sky where the dome disappears because
probably the end of the century.
Yes. This is the entrance into this particular, this is a church, by the way. This is the church of the sky shell in Mesa, Arizona. And this is the children's church. They tell me they have a hard time getting the children to go home after church. Okay? And it's like a big vacuum, a big magnet drops them into there. And they go to the Renaissance and the castle environment and the dragons and the, and they have drawbridges and all kinds of things, like a small Disneyland inside. I hear they don't. It's kind of a poor picture because they don't have all the lights on, but when that sky, that shell lights up, it essentially becomes the sky. They also use the interior surface, like they're planning to do in Mumbai, for projecting of clouds and dragons and other things in the sky itself. You can turn the lights up so it's bright, bright blue, sunny day, no matter what the weather is outside, it's a bright sunny day inside. You can also turn it down so you can see a sunset with bright glowing colors, just like a Texas sunset, if you've seen any of those, and little crickets chirping and so forth. This is done by indirect lighting. Well, it's Hollywood, it's smoke and mirrors, it's what you do in showbiz. So,
where is Mumbai?
Mumbai, India.
India.
This is Bollywood. Okay. These were developed for Stardome Studios, a fellow named Jack McCadden, early last year. And because of the cost, this was the a selection of about 50 domes on site. This doesn't show the whole complex. They're looking at putting together a sound stage. In fact, let's go ahead and start with this because I was going to start giving examples and discussions. Here's an example of a sound stage used as a sky shell. Okay, that's entertainment. Imagine if you're going to hire some of the more famous actors and you pull together a cast of 20, 30 people on a certain stage set, and plus the technicians, plus the setup time, plus the building of the set. It's not unusual, now these are old figures from 2 years ago, it's not unusual to be running somewhere around $600 to $700 per minute to exercise one of these shots. Okay, in a day, you'll run through $30,000 to $40,000 in time, in energy, to print the kind of super colossal things that you see coming out of Hollywood. That's not unusual. Now imagine that an airplane flies over, or that somebody doesn't show up, or for some reason there's a distraction up. It's cut, reshoot the thing again. To build a sound stage like this for just a little bit over $1 million is a fantastic savings in the movie business, mostly because it becomes a sound and containment shell. Now, that's probably one thing we haven't talked about. Besides, everybody here know what a blue screen is? Okay, this is the big thing in Hollywood, is where you have a set spot for your camera, and you want to have a continuous focal length, it's called. In other words, a rounded shape is what you want. And to build square sound stages means you end up building your set so you have rounded shapes inside, so you can have a continuous focal length. Part of this is done for a blue screen, or this is called a green screen in this case. There's two different, but you can put your, in this case, a pirate ship in your background in as it would be like in Pirates of the Caribbean, and you can substitute a background in back of what's in front, okay? This saves millions and millions and millions of dollars. The sound containment shell, and looking at the mass of the concrete and the polyurethane column and the airtight structure beyond it, absolutely stops sound dead. It's one of the most soundproof buildings you'll ever find. And I won't go into all the reasons for that. The floor becomes actually now becomes almost the more delicate part of it because this is so soundproof. Now, the whole point of this is that in Hollywood, where it's not unusual to go $127 million for a picture, and you're spending a tremendous amount of time in setting up, especially these really complicated shots, the dome is cheap. Okay, they didn't quite learn that lesson in Bollywood because they couldn't get the funding. They couldn't understand how well this thing worked. The fellow who was the group that was going to do that got talked to building a cheaper building. And now their competition just called us last month. This is like ABC going to competition with CBS saying, oh, we want to do it then. So it's back on the line, we pull all the old pictures out and we think it's going to get built again for a reason such as that. Let's jump to another reason for a sky shell. Dome technology is a dome builder out of Idaho Falls, Idaho, and they want to get into water parks. We did a series of studies, about 50, 60 of these, as to how to put an environment in a sky shell within a, and again, this is about 285 foot diameter. Why would that be an advantage? Well, we just had a talk in here a little while ago about humidity. Imagine the amount of humidity that you're capturing inside of something like this, and you want to be in an upside down swimming pool, something that you can't hurt with a whole lot of humidity. The maintenance is just very, very little. Anybody here been in an enclosed swimming pool environment? And it's very much, if you go to the northern part of the world where they have that strange ice and snow that you don't see in Arizona, I understand that you can go and be overwhelmed by the humidity and the smell of the chlorine and so forth in an enclosed swimming pool. And yet that's what you have to have in some of the colder countries. Imagine that you could build a huge building so you could spread out the atmospheric conditions or of a broader scale, not use chlorine, and not worry about the effect of water in an enclosed environment. That means in places like Idaho and Minnesota and New York that you can build an interior water park just like this. And this matter, if it's winter outside, it's absolutely cold below zero, and you can have water, warm water inside. It's an environment. It allows you to do things that economically that you couldn't do any other way. I guess they're rebuilding the building. Yes. There's a magnetic type, and there's a seawater, a salt type. That's replacing chlorine. Chlorine gas is the same chlorine gas they used during World War I. It's actually poison. So most everybody's getting away from chlorine now. Especially, and I'm talking about maybe not outside because it evaporates so quickly, but on the inside, I put in a series of spas within a hotel we did in Scottsdale, and it literally started eating all the metal in the room. It was that toxic, including the stainless steel, which I didn't think of it. So chlorine is a bad thing to do. But now the new saltwater systems and the magnetic filters, you can put things together on the inside. Let's take a look over here. We have Dinosaur Museum. A fellow is still looking to start funding in the Tucson area. And actually, he's going to move up to Marana, Tucson. And he has one of the bigger dinosaur collections in the country. He wants to put it into a dome. And let's see, I've got pictures here. He was very interested in what shape of structure can you put together that would be interesting on the outside. The city fathers in Tucson wouldn't let him do it. That's why he's going to Marana. But he wanted to have a volcano with steam and smoke coming out of the top. But the interesting part of it was that he said, this is how I want to introduce the Jurassic Park age, is by stepping right into that environment while you're on the outside of the building. So can you put together an airform that looks like this? The answer is yes. Anything that you can, any shape that you can inflate, we can turn into concrete. I thought that was interesting too, that looking at, by the way, it turned out to be better to still make it a dome because they wanted to be sky shelled on the interior. Remember that the exterior explains the interior. This is an example of that same water park. It ended up for up north. They had the same idea. They wanted to make it look like a very mountainous type of thing, and actually, like the Japanese near Tokyo, they're going to have a ski run off the top of the dome because it can take a tremendous amount of weight. I'm sure that's a perfect thing. So, with that, let's talk a little bit. Here's another example of a sky shell. This is not any particular environment other than it's meant as a restaurant. This is meant for Morocco, for North Africa. And you can see a projector right in the very center of the room. And it's probably another name for a planetarium. Essentially, they're going to project stars on the sky and clouds and various other things. So the interior of the shell now is being used as a projection screen. That was the purpose of this particular project. And remember, from the distance from the projector to the wall, you have to be able to focus it. So the idea that it is a round environment really helps that projection requirement. Let's see.
Let's talk about entertainment.
How about flying saucers?
This was something that had been done for a client in Texas here, in fact, down in the Houston area. And they were looking at a theme park. Part of the theme park, by the way, he contracted cancer, so it fell apart. But we got about halfway through the business plan, and it was exciting, to say the least. This is publicity type of stuff, but the part of the idea was,
first of all, you have an Iridian ship that arrives from a galaxy far, far away, and you go through the exercise of what if some people from a foreign planet actually arrived here, what would you do? Now, forget Hollywood, because they have no clue. What would you actually do? You're talking about an ambassadorial interview. You're talking about actually introducing the people of Earth to these people from far away. And part of what they do after traveling for many light years is bring, first of all, not just the shape of the saucer, but on the interior, you have three different sky shells, which are environments from their particular planet. For instance, in this case, you have the Iridian landscape, the Marshallots, and the Glumps. The Glumps are very, the Intergalactic Council had to throw them in. They're kind of like cavemen, but they had to be represented, so they came on the long ship. Well, the interesting thing about this is they started out with seven of them. By the time they got here, they had 2,400, even dumping some on the planet halfway here. They tend to reproduce a lot. But as you get acquainted with these people, it's kind of like, it's a great comedy. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, you have a culture that's introduced through the use of sky shells within a flying saucer type shape, and it's treated somewhat like a Class B 1950s movie, and with lots of humor and insight. All it can be done in something where you can create a separate environment to take people into it. In other words, the purpose of the theme park is to create a separate environment. That's the whole purpose. The other part of it was originally, when it first developed, was that the land that was acquired for it was, you couldn't get enough parking on it. And so the idea of being able to drive your cars underneath or parking underneath shaded parking became part of the requirement. That went away later as they moved to Houston. Okay, let's go to another environment. I personally have been to Disneyland when it's been blowing and cold, and no matter what the weather is, imagine going to a theme park where it doesn't matter what the weather is outside. This particular type of thing was a study done for a small theme park. This is 126 foot diameter, and because of the codes, the way they're written, there was a great savings in construction cost if you keep below 12,000 square feet. Going through the international code review, 12,000 square feet. Beyond that, you get into fire sprinklers and exiting. There's all kinds of things that happen at that particular size. And so the experiment was, what can you pack into 12,000 square feet? We started looking at about five different models. We looked at the Chuck E. Cheese's. I think in Texas, you have a lot of Chuck E. Cheese's here. Okay. Started looking at franchises and what you can do for entertainment, what entertains kids, and so forth. And we found out that motion rides, and I won't go through the whole thing, but this was part of that study. Again, the idea is that this would remain open and be very much viable as a business opportunity, because you never have shut down because of weather. You can control everything. You don't worry about outside noise either coming in or noise going out. You can be a good neighbor even in near residential neighborhoods, because it stops at a dead. Anyway, you get the idea, is that the dome itself
becomes part of the business plan. You really couldn't do it any other way because of the characteristics of which you would what you come up with. This was something done some years ago, and I think this has been on the website for some time. We looked at Inquiquishar, China, doing four domes of this size and hooking them together into a mall, the interconnecting mall area in between. Inquiquishar is kind of like the Disneyland of China. It's an entertainment area. It's up near the big lake up north. And they wanted something that could be located right near their biggest public transportation hub. Be shopping in hotels and entertainment all at the same time. This is extremely unusual for the Chinese. They just don't do that. But when they saw this concept of the sky shell, they began to think, you know, we could introduce other, and in a controlled environment. You have to be there at the meetings to see their faces. In a controlled environment, especially because of their space program they wanted to get into, they wanted to be able to provide entertainment and education and it high technology to their people the way that they wanted to. And they didn't want anybody else to see it. It's kind of like trying to play cards but not showing anybody your cards, and you're not going to put them on the table. I don't know how to describe it, but government-wise, the closure was very important to them. The fact that nobody else could see what they were doing except the Chinese. It's like being frisked down when you go into Disneyland. You wonder why you're there. So this was Jet McAdam, he's a movie producer, he's a friend of mine, sent me this. We're looking at a project ourselves on our own property. Now this is for ourselves. Eric and I are looking at going out of business eventually, and we're looking for something to replace it. This is one of the ideas I got from Jack McAdam, the movie producer. This is a similar like to a water park, except that he is showing a masked horizon. Imagine your word, masked horizon. It took me a while to understand the term. In an environment where you can light up the sky using indirect lighting from different sources. And you get light coming back easily in controlled refraction back to your eyes, the dome will literally disappear. As it comes down and you're allowed to focus on something that's close to you, you want to be able to mask the horizon. For instance, suppose that you have on the set here, you have a line of buildings, or in this case, he's suggesting trees, jungle, and other things. You'll focus on what's closest to you around the perimeter, and you can't tell whether what's behind it is 10 feet away or 10 miles away. So masking at the perimeter becomes important as far as establishing the environment within the interior. And then with the big flush, this is our flush box, this is a wave maker. You can actually send waves onto the beach, and you have the Hawaiian restaurant. This is the Oasis, a tropical paradise, surrounded with restaurants and locker rooms and so forth. You go out swimming. Now again, imagine on a day like this in Dallas, you can go swimming in a warm environment, bright sunny day, doesn't matter what it looks like outside. This would be great fun. You can actually go surfing indoors. Again, the key is that the sky shell is what makes it possible. Yes, you could do it in other buildings, but not anywhere near as economically and as well as that. So, with that, I think we can probably talk a little bit about other entertainment venues, and there's a lot of them, but let's turn the time over to you to start going through here's the first example of the Iridian ship, where we started from, and changed and developed and went a couple of different directions. Any questions on sky shells or anything else?
Talk about the economics of it. You know, I'm in the sports design business, okay, and we're looking at 200 and 300 foot diameter, if not even larger sometimes. Talk about the economics of it. I mean, I understand the construction economics, that's where you see a lot of cost savings right away. But, you know, that, as a designer and technical advisor of the Beijing Olympics, we fought over that the cube for a long time, for the water cube that they just did. And it's a real interesting issue.
Okay. Typically, from an engineering standpoint, and this is where the economics start, is in engineering. Let me tell you where we're at in the industry right now. It used to be that we would stop right at about 260-foot diameter because of the tensile strength of the airform fabric. Now, what that means is we would you can add. And I don't spend time going through the actual structure and so forth, but you, with a dome about 12 inches thick at the base and tapering about, I'm talking about the concrete,
yep,
6 inches at the top, this is the most economical you can do. And that was because airforming, that's what's new. Airforming allows you to cover large amounts of area, the least amount of material and the least amount of labor. It becomes very, very economical. Domes that, it used to be that compared to metal buildings, and metal buildings have been, we've used that for comparison for some time, right at the 80 to 85 foot diameter for the equivalent of a metal building about the same size, we're about the same cost. There's mobilization and setup time and so forth. Over the last few years, this has changed up to about around 95 to 110, depending on what part of the country you are. In other words, you could get an equivalent, I'm talking about shell cost. Okay. But shell cost means it's just like this room, it's an empty shell. And it used to be tied so much to spans, but right now, the way the cost of steel is and concrete and we a lot of prefabrication goes, it's still in Texas about that amount. As soon as you start getting above that in diameter, you start to pull ahead. By the time you get to about 150-foot diameter, you can see a substantial savings and have a far superior building and with a lot less air conditioning. Remember, I'm talking about just the shell. There are other savings that happen with a monolithic concrete dome. Some of it's electrical, some of it's mechanical, some of it's how you do things, and some other costs are more expensive as you start to subdivide the dome. Depends on what the use is and what you're doing. As soon as you start approaching 200 foot, there's almost no competition. By the time you get to 260 foot diameter, it's so far ahead of what's in second place, it's amazing. Okay. Now, Mayer, out of, I want to say Germany, it's not Germany, it's Amsterdam. The place that's making the best fabric lately. It used to be it would be Ferrari of France, and then there's about two places in the United States. There's four airform or fabric makers that had that would make a scrim fabric, and the tensile strength of the actual fabric has changed now that we can actually go up to about 400 foot diameter without building without putting ribs onto the interior of it. Okay, this is really good because before we never quite able to cover a football field economically. We always would have to go to a cranosphere. Has anybody talked to you about a cranosphere?
I'm a structural engineer, and I've talked to the gang about the chronosphere.
Okay, Dr. Arnold Wilson is the best guy to talk to. He's the one that did most of the development work on the chronosphere. Okay, we can now, at this point, get away from cable staying and simply build ribs on the interior in a method that's being developed by Dome Technology. And we figure that we can cover 400-foot diameter, and it probably will be about a tenth of the cost of any other system we can find for the shell. Okay. Easily a tenth. If you can imagine that it could be built in weeks instead of months, let's put it this way. On the Discovery Channel, I was watching the building of the new stadium there for the Cardinals, in Glendale, Arizona, it's mountain territory. And they were talking about the biggest spans that they had in that truss that was there. It was supposed to be one of the biggest trusses in the world. It was jacked up on each end, the hydraulics were here. It took a long time to get it in place. I understand that the cost of that one truss by itself was $25 million to get it in place. And it was right at, I forget the span, it was way up there, like 350 foot span.
And there were two of them. There.
And then plus the perimeter walls to support it. And it was very similar structure to what you'll see down here at the Dallas Cowboys. It was a fabric roof. It had a tin corrugation that was held up by cables, and anyway, you're structural here, you figure it out. Imagine building 400 foot diameter, and you're building for that an entire shell, you're hitting around 1.8 to 2.1 million for the complete shell, where anything else, your competition, it only gets this far to build one truss that had to be built on site. All the stuff was shipped in, was assembled on site. It took almost 3 months to get that truss in place. So not just the cost of the truss, but the jacking up and the stabilizing it and the foundations and the gears, all that is replaced by something that's far, far less. So I'm gonna stick my neck out and say it's about a tenth of the cost just for covering the same amount of area. Now, how you subdivide that after that, you get into the interior and you put in seating structures and so forth, and I can give you a lot more ideas on that, but here's an example of how the bigger you build it, the less it's going to cost per square foot.
Well, what we were doing in Beijing was, and they weren't considering the dome at the time, but the concept of about which you can build interior with precast structures and things like that, when you talk about stadium work, for instance, fairly simple construction, a stadium. Mm-hmm. It's just how you close it. It's the problem. And as you know, the conventional architect struggles with the dome very, very much.
Yeah, so. Because it's so simple, it doesn't have the aesthetic. I'm an architect, I know, I've been there.
Yeah.
You have troubles, it gets so simple on one side, you're saying, it's too simple, it shouldn't work. What can you do with it?
Well, I mean, we have about 40 projects. I work for the U.S. Olympic Committee. We have about 40 projects throughout the country working with municipalities that have all seen price blowouts this year. Mm-hmm. $40 million budgets that are priced up about $85 million. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, my job is to walk in and say I can probably get it done. And you know, that's
I'd be glad to show you some studies that we've done for about this size, running from $15 to $60 million instead of the $270 million. Was paid for the Glendale Arena. Now, keep in mind that when you get into government entities, this means nothing. Cost doesn't mean anything. So when you start talking to the private world,
it's not true.
Means everything.
It's not true. I mean, I work for a pseudo government agency.
Yeah.
The U.S. Olympic Committee supports sports development all over the country. Okay. And with all these sports projects, you know, seriously over budget.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Well, somebody has to say something because the money's, it's quite frankly, it's not there. I mean, we're talking about a price blowout on these large facilities that probably go back into redesign again. They've already spent $6 million to get there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And somebody's eventually going to say uncle and they're not going to build it, which is, that's the government agency part. Either they spend a lot of money and get it done, or they just dropped the whole project.
That's exactly the attitude that needs to take place in order to realize the savings in something like this. It's, essentially, the whole thing boils down to air pressure. The air pressure is now taking the place of scaffolding and cranes and all the other kind of things, all the preparation and mobilization that takes place for these large buildings.
And construction under enclosure. I mean, that's another big issue. I mean, if you look at your construction timeline, drop right down.
Oh, yeah, fantastic. And not only that, but the first thing that goes up is the roof, and everybody can work inside. Makes a big difference. Yes?
Yeah, wouldn't just the lifespan of the building itself be such a huge draw?
Yeah. In some of our heating tests, actually building a fire in here, we were looking at how it would affect the steel, looking at fire ratings, and we can't even compare it to anything else. It's so far advanced that, well, a quick lesson here. This is the strength of the dome right here. It's in this circle. We which becomes the tension ring, and it's protected, it's below grade. And everything else is trying to fall in on top of itself. So no matter what you expose the dome to, you're to hit the dome with very large size outside forces that sends everything through the shell down into the foundation. That, in quick, simple explanation, is why the longevity of the dome is so far advanced beyond just typical bending stresses you're going to have at times.
Yes. My name is Doris. I'm back in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I've been down there to Rudolph, from Knoxville.
Yes.
And what we try to do, I'm about 1:30, and we're going to get Billy Bundy to do an inside track in her memory, also in the basketball, football, and sports room.
Mm-hmm.
Would the sky shell dome be something similar to that, because they're going to be inside of it?
Yeah. Which one of the tracks do you want? We did design something for Midlothian, Texas, down here, and it was 420-foot diameter. This is back long ago, or about 2 years ago, maybe three. And the track, the oval track that we had to have, and I forget, we looked at the three different track types as far as length, and they had to have a very specific track. I forget what it was, but in order to enclose that, we had to go 420-foot. You can put one, if it's accepted in your area, in your region, in a 400-foot diameter dome. But the overruns are different, and where they and how they break at the end are different. The difference between a crinosphere, and I don't know the name of this new one we're looking at, it's a hemispherical, let's call it hemispherical. The hemispherical dome, that means that we don't use cable staying. I'm afraid I'd have to get into, there's quite a bit to take to explain it. Take my word for it, that a crinosphere, the cost of construction does this. And a lot of this just is because of the technique it takes to build a dome. Domes tend to cost like this. Okay. 150-foot diameter is the most economical dome to get to a certain point. And then it goes like that. The larger you go, 180, 200, 250, the price starts to go down until it gets to a certain point. You get to the very end of the fabric strength, the tensile strength of the fabric to be able to blow it up to a certain amount of pressure to hold up the weight. That's essentially it. And then it jumps like this. And it goes up to a crinosphere. Because you have to add a number of things, then it starts to go back down again. So a lot of what we've been doing in sports has been going right to the edge of 280-foot, 300-foot. Hi!
5 minutes.
Five. Okay. And the industry kind of stopped there, not gone as far as the crinosphere. As I'm understanding, we can now push that edge. And you want to talk to Dr. Arnold Wilson on that, he's a structural engineer. We think we're approaching 400-foot without going to the crinosphere technology. Crinospheric technology allows us to go up to 1,000-foot diameter.
On an off-related subject, I've been in smaller domes, and sometimes you can hear weird echoes and sound travels funny. So how does that affect the bigger domes?
Same way. You're talking about acoustical focus?
Yeah, because you said, like, it doesn't let the outside noise in, but what happens to the inside noise?
The domes have the very best of acoustics and the very worst of acoustics. Okay? If you're standing right here on the side of the dome, and the distance becomes fairly equal all directions, and you make a noise, the end is called acoustical focus. It's just like having a megaphone pointed right at your ear. You get over here to the side, this, and you're projecting sound. Say you're the source of the sound. Then it's some of the best acoustics. And what we've done, for instance, in the studies we're doing here at Mumbai, we looked at all different kinds of things, and there's three ways we control sound. Reflection, refraction, and absorption. And depending on what your particular source is, for instance, here in Mumbai, they don't put a concrete floor in. They put in what they call a heavy sand for absorption. They put sound cones in the center, and we have reflection boards up at the top. And they each set is what it would assemble in here would be also designed acoustically for that dome, because it does tend to become a problem. The easiest solution for most all the sets that we were doing in here was don't put them in metal. That took care of acoustical focus. So all the sets are masked like this. You can get some long, long shots now. In the biggest sound stages you can get in LA, in Hollywood and so forth, the longest they'd be able to go is 90 feet. And now we're able to get long shots up to 200 feet with proper masking and with a green sky behind it. I'm talking about the electronic projected sky. So they can get much, much bigger scenes than they used to without having to go outdoors. It's technical, but they found that that was ideal for them. If you put them in the center, then you have acoustical focus, then you have to start breaking up the sound by putting reflectors or other things. Part of the reason is what we did right here is we put a pretty good sized mountain in the center so nobody could stand there. And this is the enclosure for the mine ride and for all the other things that happen. So that solved acoustical focus, not just because of the shape of the mountain, but because you don't have to spend a lot of time in working on the interior surface to make it acoustically sound like it. Fast lesson. Okay, any other questions?
Right.
Eric, do you want to show them a few pictures of some of the things you've been working on? Like that one that's right there. This is a project. Yes.
My name is Tony. Can you do a taco shell? Can you do a sky shell?
Eco shells really are pretty hard to get beyond 20 and 30 foot diameter because of the process. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it is the construction. In other words, with everything in place, it works fine. It's the construction technique to get it there that becomes quite complicated. It's almost cheaper to spray the foam when you get into larger sizes because it acts as it helps the technique for working between the air form and the concrete connections and the steel and so forth. It just makes a great buffer. This is the Starburst Center. Okay, that's the way it's on your screen. That's right. This is something that's a project that's currently underway in Goodyear, Arizona. Reverse that. Okay. And it's built around three different domes because of the soundproofing idea. One is a 2,100 seat theater. One is what you call a cabaret or a dinner theater where they're serving dinner. The other is a ballroom. And one of the reasons for the selection of this particular project was that you could have three separate activities happening at the same time without disturbing each other. So it became very, very important. They looked at the Bollywood example as well. That's it. We can have an orchestra playing here and not disturb anybody over here. It stops the sound dead. There is no building that's more soundproof than a monolith dome. The weaknesses are only at the openings. Okay. Did you have a... Well, anyway, did that answer all the questions? I think we're out of time. But since lunch is next, there's about lunch, I'll be glad to answer any more questions. And I have examples of other things you may want to look at. I don't necessarily want to take these home, so if you want to take a copy of those back with you as well.